Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Shri Bhakti Vaibhava ki.
Jai.
Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
Jai.
Kirina Maharaj ki.
Jai.
Jai Nidai Gopremanandi. So what we discussed last night?
In order to advance in Krishna consciousness, one needs to have an advanced association. Regarding association, you said first, the first association is Prabhupada, because you said Prabhupada is Paramahamsa devotee. Because he is a Paramahamsa, we need his books association. After that, we need to have advanced devotee association. And the third one is Vani and Mahapur association of pure devotees.
Any other points?
The Chaitanya went to near the seashore where Jajali, the great Vaishnava, was also residing. So they chose to stay with Vaishnava during that part of their life. I was listening to a lecture by Gaur Govind Prabhu, and he was mentioning a small pastime in which Lord Shiva was going with Parvati and Nandi. So he looked at one place and tell Nandi to stop, and he got down and paid obeisances. But Mother Parvati said, "There is no one here, why you are paying obeisances?" Then he said, 10,000 years back there was a devotee who was doing devotional service to Lord Vishnu, and hence this place is very glorious. And after that, they went to another place, and again he paid no obeisances. And this time again, she asked, "Who was performing austerities here before?" He said, "Not now, but in 5,000 years, there will be one devotee who will come and do the devotional service here." So he was having very respect for the Vaishnavas who were performing devotional service to Lord Vishnu. So inspiring for us to.
Any other points?
Other points regarding chanting, you said. I mean, the practical gift which was given by Haridas Thakur, one needs to chant an Ekadashi days and Janmashtami days, they have to chant more rounds. And other, if we really want to advance in our chanting, we need to chant with advanced devotees because their consciousness is more powerful than ours. In that way, he also can advance. And also improve the quality of the chanting.
Any other points?
The Vaishnava culture is mainly based around giving respect to the elderly people and the people who are spiritually elevated. Like, the example is when the Indians, they all paid their obeisances and showed all the respect. They have the mood of gratitude towards their elders for bringing them to that point. And of course, this is also maybe a problem with me in the workplace. If you go there and work, sometimes your colleagues are those who are elder than your father's age. And the way they come across to you is like a competitor and try to suppress you. Firstly, we don't have that mood, and secondly, because of their needs, we cannot say them. But they don't understand this factor, that why we are so, we're not telling them anything. Otherwise, sometimes their behavior and their approach towards us is very objectionable. So they consider us their colleague and they want to fight on that as equal platform. So still, I'm not that out of that mindset. He's elder, so even if he's elder, but we have to fight that way.
So then what to do?
You have to work.
So what do you want? You want some advice on something?
I don't don't know. It was just like a practical problem I face. If a person who is a colleague, technically, but is double of your age, and we don't feel like correcting them.
So, is there a problem?
Sometimes it is, and we don't know how to solve and go about doing that.
So what do you want me to do?
We tell something how we can understand.
Not sure what to do. And is this complication of work for us? Problem is more envy than the age thing. Just people don't know how to get along with each other. World is very mixed up. Humility reconciles everything. Any problem we have, by being humble, that solves the problem. So just remain humble and it will pass. Nothing to get worried about. I don't know if that's any help. But any other point? So the Prachetas now is the final chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. They are practicing now to renounce the world and to perfect their self-realization. So tonight we'll go from verses 11 to 20. And then next Monday we'll finish the chapter 21 to 31. And then on the Tuesday we'll do a revision. Next Tuesday, the revision of the whole, all the chapters, 24 to 31, the whole section. And the following Monday will be the closed book examination. Closed book examination, okay. So we'll continue now. Without devotional service, what is the meaning of severe austerities? The process of hearing, the power of speech, the power of mental speculation, elevated intelligence, strength, and the power of the senses.
Relationship with the Supreme Lord is never advanced by simple study of the Vedas. There are many Mayavadi sannyasis fully engaged in studying the Vedas. Vedas, Sutras, Upanishads, but unfortunately they cannot grasp the real essence of knowledge. In other words, they do not know the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What then is the use in studying all the Vedas if one cannot grasp the essence of the Vedas? Krishna. The Lord confirms in Bhagavad Gita 15.15, Vedasya Sarvam Ahameva Vedya. By all the Vedas I am to be known. There are many religious systems wherein penances and austerities are greatly stretched, but at the end no one understands Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is therefore no point in such penance, that is tapasya, if one has actually approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He does not need to undergo severe austerities. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is understood through the process of devotional service. In the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, devotional service is explained as Raja Puljan, the king of all confidential knowledge. There are many good reciters of Vedic literatures and they recite works such as Ramayana, Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes these professional readers manifest very good scholarship and exhibit word regularly. Unfortunately, they are never devotees of the Supreme Lord. Consequently, they do not impress upon the audience the real essence of knowledge, Krishna. There are also many thoughtful writers and creative philosophers, but despite all their learning, if they cannot approach the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they are simply useless mental speculators. There are many sharply intelligent people in this material world and they discover so many things for sense gratification. They also adequately study all the material elements. But despite their expert knowledge and expert scientific analysis of the whole cosmic manifestation, their endeavors are useless because they cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As far as our senses are concerned, they are
there are many animals, both beasts and birds, who are very expert in exercising their senses more keenly than human beings. For example, vulture or fox can go very high in the sky, but they can see a small boy on the ground very clearly. This means that their eyesight is so keen that they can find even an eatable corpse from a great distance. Certainly their eyesight is much keener than human beings, but it does not mean that their existence is more important than of the human being. Similarly, dogs can smell many potent than that of the human being, similarly of human beings, things far from distance. Many fish can understand by the power of sound that the enemy is coming. All these examples are described in Srimad Bhagavatam. If one's senses cannot help him to attain the highest perfection of life, realization of the Supreme, they are all useless.
So any points?
All the senses of communication, emotional service.
Any other points?
The purpose of studying the very people is to understand Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is no other question. Purpose for that.
And all the study and all the knowledge of the Vedas is useless unless you understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that's the ultimate anyway. Unless you understand that, all the studies is wasted.
Any other points?
If any activities does not end up in the ruchi or attraction towards the feeling of some of the stories.
Anything else?
Sunday Peace Lecture, Kadam Kanan Maharaj was giving a class and he tried to compare the person of Krishna consciousness with other religion, and he said there are many religions or many activities that they do. It's to do many austerities greater than what ISKCON devotee would do. But finally, their understanding about the whole process is not very well defined. They don't have any understanding about Lord, His activities, His place of residence. But that is described in great details in our scriptures. So, and also Abhidev, the process, that's what makes ISKCON a very well-defined in a way. So Sambandh is there, Abhidev is there, and Abhidev is there. So we, there is a process as well that we can follow what we in the law of God, which is not described in other literatures.
The difference between the animals and the humans is dharma hi tesham adhiko visheshah. If a human being does not visibly realize his senses, focus his dharma, then what is the difference between the animals?
One question. Let's say Lord has taken appearance in different avatars, like he has taken came as the Kurma, Matsya, and Shuka. So how do we know that that Lord was not there to help them? We say human being is the only platform where we can elevate ourselves because of higher level of consciousness. But since Lord also appeared, as we know for sure, in Matsya avatar and Shuka avatar, so
Shuka.
Both.
Varaha.
So, Lord appeared in their species as well, so they would have got chance from elevating from that species as well.
No, not like that. The Lord appeared like that, but it doesn't mean that everyone in that species won't get elevated necessarily. There's no connection. So, So, we see Prabhupada is emphasizing in the first paragraph that in order to understand the Vedas, one must study the Vedas under a bona fide authority. If you don't not understand the Vedas through an authority who is bona fide in disciplic succession, means connected to one of the four bona fide sampradayas, Vaishnava sampradayas, then one cannot understand the conclusion of the Vedas. So therefore, Vedic study in and of itself will not necessarily yield a result, or one will not necessarily understand Krishna. You can only understand Krishna when you are studying under someone who has authority, or who has been given the authority to teach the Vedas. And what is the authority to teach the Vedas? It means that they're not changing anything they've heard from their spiritual master. That is the authority. And by that authority, then one can speak. Then one can become a teacher of the Vedas. So, one has to be bona fide in disciplic succession. Not that one is concocting or coming in a disciplic succession which is not recognized by the Vedas themselves. So then, in order for the Vedic knowledge to come to life, Vedeshu dulabam adulabam atma bhakto. Then if you try to understand the Vedas but not practice bhakti, then it will simply remain theoretical. Many people study the Vedas, even in universities around the world, they have departments where Indology, where the Vedic literatures are studied. But still, people do not understand the purport of the Vedas. In other words, they don't necessarily become devotees of Krishna. Prabhupada says in the introduction to the Bhagavad Gita that there are so many versions of the Bhagavad Gita in the world, but have they produced devotees of Krishna? So therefore, what is the use of those versions of the Bhagavad Gita? People are reading them, but if they're not transforming their lives to become bhaktas, bhaktosime sakacheti yekadyakashim uttama rahasyam ekadyakashim, and Krishna is saying that if one is not becoming a devotee, then he cannot understand the knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita. It is not theoretical. It is not simply by memorization. It is not that someone memorizes and then he is necessarily, he may be learned, but that doesn't make him a devotee. Whereas the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vairagya Vidya, Nija Bhakti Yogena, their bhakti is infused or enriched with Vairagya and Vidya, which means the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are very learned personalities, but although they are the most learned personalities, they are also the richest in devotion. They have the most bhakti for Krishna. So that is the fruit of the learning. If you're a learner but you do not have bhakti, or you do not practice bhakti, if it remains all theoretical, then what is the point? The whole point of the learning is to become devoted and to perform devotional service. Actually, the most learned persons in creation are the gopis of Vrindavan. They are the most learned personalities. But still, they are the most devoted to Krishna, and that is the perfection of all learning. So there's no use being learned simply in and of itself. Okay. Now Prabhupada also says that just because, he says, that one who is engaged in bhakti yoga does not need to engage in severe austerities. So you see in different paths in the Vedas, people perform severe austerities and great tapasya. This is not necessary in bhakti yoga. What is emphasized in bhakti yoga is Krishna's pleasure. And that is bhakti. Bhakti means that the activity gives pleasure to Krishna. So we're not interested in performing austerities in and of themselves. That I will do this, I will do that, I'll perform this tapasya, I'll perform that tapasya. I'll perform this penance, I'll perform that austerity. The devotee is interested in pleasing Krishna. And if he has to do some austerity while serving Krishna, then he happily accepts that austerity. But he doesn't perform austerity just for austerity's sake. And then Prabhupada says that if one is going to become a speaker, or one is going to become a reciter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, then he must lead people to Krishna. There is no use being a speaker if the audience has not become enriched with devotion or infused with devotion. As it says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, what is the use of the hunter's arrow or the poet's words if they do not enter the heart and make the head spin? So if you're speaking on the Bhagavatam, you're speaking about Krishna consciousness, then you must change the hearts of the people you're speaking to. Otherwise, what is the point of speaking? Right? What is the point of your discourse? Not that we're just doing it to impress people with our knowledge, but rather we're trying to change the hearts of those who we speak to. That is the actual aim of speaking about Krishna. Many people in India now have become learned reciters, even though they speak on the Bhagavatam for 7 days, 7 nights, Bhagavad Shabda, but there is not devotion to Krishna, and they do not change the hearts of the audience. So what is the point? And it is an offence to the Bhagavatam to speak the Bhagavatam just to maintain one's family. So many of the Bhagavatam speakers these days, they speak just to maintain the family. That is their motivation. Okay? Then that's an offence to the Bhagavatam. To speak, it brings the Bhagavatam, it is material activity, it's not spiritual activity. So therefore the Bhagavatam must only be spoken to uplift the audience, to purify the audience. That is the purpose of speaking in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Otherwise one should not speak. So any points?
Question. If a person is learned, right, wouldn't Bhagavad Gita says, aham agyana jantamah, he destroys the ignorance and lights up the knowledge in their heart, right? So how can that be? I mean, if a person is learned, then how can they not be a, become a devotee?
If they're learned, how can they not become a devotee?
If they know, they study the Vedas, right? And Bhagavad Gita says, like, you know, Tesham eva nikapatam aham agyana jantamah, nācyam aso bhagato jnana dīpena vāsukha. Right, so he destroys the ignorance and gives the knowledge to understand better. Right, so if they study all that, then how is it possible that they just become a speaker and not a devotee?
Because the Vedas, many parts of the Vedas, can the Upanishads and so forth, can be interpreted either personally or impersonally. So if one has an impersonal guru, then one will take it impersonally. So it's possible to become loaded in the Vedas but be impersonal. It's just like Prakashananda Saraswati and his 60,000 followers in Benares when Mahaprabhu was travelling. Then they were all impersonalists. They did not. They were all very learned in the Vedas, but they did not understand the purport of the Vedas. And then Lord Chaitanya transformed their consciousness. He converted them to Vaishnavism. Because they asked him to sit, he showed his effulgence, and they asked him, and he was very humble, he sat where the shoes were kept. And they asked him to come and sit with them. And then he said to them that, actually, I am a fool. My spiritual master considered me a fool. And he said, I should simply chant the Hare Krishna mantra, which is the essence of all of the Vedic knowledge. Any other points?
Ananda Maharaj gave a reply to a similar question. And Maharaj said, it is not very difficult to understand something intellectually. You can. But if you don't have faith, then it just becomes a knowledge only. So it's a combination of thoughtfulness and faithfulness that is required. If you're just thoughtful and not faithful, it just becomes a mental speculator. And if you're faithful and not thoughtful, then it just becomes frenetic. So, and it's only a gap sukriti from knowledge. If you are in a Gyan Yoga, and if you get a gap sukriti, that's how you comes into the bhakti process. It's a gap sukriti, that's how Gyan Yogi becomes a bhakti yoga.
That was my second point as well, actually. So, many people come and attend lectures, either in ISKCON or any other, right? So it depends on their level of agyata sukriti, that whether they take it up or not, isn't it? Right. So not necessarily that if they hear Bhagavatam from any person for that matter, maybe Srila Prabhupada or whoever, unless they have that deserving capability, they will not be able to take it up. Would that be?
Yeah.
Because so then, like even if they're hearing from a more senior devotee, if they don't deserve it, it might not change their heart.
Yeah, if they haven't purified themselves in their consciousness. Any other point?
Yeah. I mean, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's case, because he was freely giving love and because he was Krishna and Radharani, he was able to elevate people who were entirely ignorant. In fact, demons, in fact, were able to be elevated and come to love Krishna because he was had so much mercy to give. So, if you're a normal person, then it's hard to give them mercy, but if you're full of mercy, then for somebody that's like that, they can elevate anybody.
But the thing with Jesus Christ too, right? I mean, he was the Son of God. But how many people became a devotee of Jesus? They had he himself had to take him.
Well, many became devotees of Jesus. In fact, the Romans tried to wipe him out. 300 years and could.
What's your point?
Can the book distributor maintain his family by selling Bhagavan at a high price?
Yeah, generally the system is that the 50% will go to the grihasthas, then 50% will go to the temple, then 50%, you make an arrangement with the temple, the 50% could be taken by the book distributor. That arrangement has been there in the past. So if that arrangement is there, then you can... Okay. Yeah, it's very difficult to maintain grihastha ashram by selling it. Unless one's very empowered. Some devotees can do it. Wait, you want to try? You don't want to try?
I actually asked this question because speaking of many people, if you're going to be more interested in the side of the profession, you need to.
Yeah, no, it's a little bit different. The book used to be, for a book used to be here. It's also very difficult to do that on a practical level. I used to sell books as a free hustler, but it's very difficult to make enough money to maintain the ashram. Some devotees can do it. If you can do it, then it's glorious. Because then 50% is going to the BBT, so that's perfectly hustler. Yeah. Okay. Transcendental practices that do not ultimately help one realize the Supreme Personality of Godhead are useless. Be they mystic yoga practices, the analytical study of matter, severe austerity, the acceptance of sannyas, or the study of Vedic literature. All these may be very important aspects of spiritual advancement, but unless one understands the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, all these processes are useless.
In Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhyamila 24.1.0.9, Bhakti Vina Kevalam Jnane Mukti Nahi Jaya. Bhakti Sadhana Kareli Prapta Dharma Jaya. In Goswami is not take to the devotional series, but take to other practices, such as the analytical study of the material principles. The discrimination between matter and spirit in the mystic yoga system. These are beneficial only in so far as they are complementary to devotional service. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore told Sanatana Goswami that without a touch of devotional service, Jnana, Yoga and Sankhya philosophy cannot give one the desired results. The Impasthanis wish to merge into the Supreme Brahman. However, merging into the Supreme Brahman also requires a touch of devotional service. The absolute truth is realized in three phases, Impasthan Brahman, Paramatma and Supreme Personality of God. All this require a touch of devotional service. Sometimes it is actually seen that this Mahamantra is also chanted Hare Krishna Mahamantra, although their motive is to merge into the Brahman essence of the Absolute. The yogis also at times take to chanting the Hare Krishna Mahamantra, but their purpose is different from that of the Bhaktas. In all processes, karma, jnana, and yoga, bhakti is required. That is the purpose of this verse.
So, the point is.
How
If you are impersonal, this is how bhakti will come in for me?
No, it means there must be a tinge of bhakti for the process or the discipline or the practice of the other paths to become perfect. There must be some bhakti touching, or there must be a small amount of bhakti in the practice to get the result. Any other point?
Including the Bhagavan realization, I require a touch of devotional service. So, can you say a touch of devotional service is enough to reach the Supreme Personality of Godhead realization? Just for Brahman or Paramatma? Or you should be much more involved in the devotional service than anything else?
What do you think?
Much more is required.
That is the answer. Thank you. Any other point? So, there is Yoga Mishra, Kama Mishra, Jnana Mishra, Bhakti. That means that the devotional process is mixed with the elements of the other processes of realization. So one may practice like an Ashtanga process or a yoga process like that. It means that one practices like we heard Dhruva Maharaj practice like that. They do like an Ashtanga yoga, which is not traditionally bhakti yoga. You see, we don't do like any Ashtanga in our bhakti. You know? Really. I mean, there is correlation or parallel, but it is not that we actually do the practice. We don't sit down, we don't do the meditation, we do japa. So it's similar, but it's different like that. So, the other processes, some people, they may be attached, especially in the previous ages, to a particular process. So then they keep practicing, but then they add bhakti into their process and they become perfect. Whereas in Kali Yuga, it is generally we just practice bhakti yoga, we practice sankirtan. We follow the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which are taught by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So then we emphasize the five principal elements of devotional service. Nam Kirtan, Sadhu Sangha, Bhagavat Shravan, Mathura Vas, and Sri Murti, Shradaya Sevan. Worshipping the deities, residing in the holy places, reading the Bhagavatam, associating with the devotees, chanting the holy names. This is the process to become perfect that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu recommends, the bhakti process. So, but it is seen in other ages that people would practice Jnana Mishra, Yoga Mishra, Kama Mishra Bhakti. They'd still do the activities they're doing. But by adding bhakti to it, then they would become perfect. Like that. Haridas Thakur describes in the Harinam Chintamani that the other processes, they are means to an end. But bhakti is the means and the end. In other words, the activities you perform in bhakti are the same activities you'll perform in liberation. In sadhana and sadhya, the activities are identical. Just like we have Yashomati Nanda, Grashabara Nagara, Gokula Ranjana, Karna. Bhaktivinoda Thakur has written so many bhajans. And Narottama Das Thakur. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. These songs are sung by the gopis in the spiritual world, by the residents of Vrindavan in the spiritual world. They're coming from the spiritual world, these songs. So, the same activity that we do in sadhana, it will be done in sadhya, or in perfection. In sadhana bhakti and prema bhakti, the same activities will be there, like that. But one is perfect, one is ripe, one is unripe. So bhakti is the means and the end. You do bhakti to do pure devotional service. Vaidhi bhakti will lead to bhava bhakti. Okay. That is the system of devotional service. As opposed to in the other processes, then you'll do the particular activity, but it is not the end. In other words, the yogi will do meditation, but he will not be meditating in the spiritual world. We don't see pictures anyone, any of Krishna's associates. You don't see any of the pictures that they're all doing meditation or studying the Vedas or like that. Simply, they're doing devotional services. Like the gopis are playing musical instruments for Krishna and Radha Rani. So also in the spiritual world, they will do the same activities. What we do here for the deities, you will do the same. Prabhupada said in 1977, in his final year in Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada said the most fortunate souls in the universe are the pujaris of Krishna and Balaram. Because the activities you do as a pujari, when you serve the deity, those activities are identical to the activities you'll do in the spiritual world. All the activities are the same. So these activities that we do in bhakti yoga, they're the same as what will be done in the spiritual world. It is the means and it is the end. Therefore, bhakti is the supreme yoga process. It is the supreme way of linking with the Lord. It is the most effective way, it is the most natural way of connecting with Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in all the other processes, there must be a tinge of bhakti to make them successful. Just like in karma yoga, then someone's trying to reach the heavenly planets, say, performing like the karma kandya activities, but they have to worship the Lord, Lord Narayan. There are mantras within the yogis to reach the heavenly planets in which one gives adoration or credit or respect to the Supreme Lord, to Narayan. And it is by his mercy that the process becomes, you get the fruit that you are desiring. Otherwise you will not get it. So there must be some touch of bhakti there. So it's Prabhupada's describing in all the systems. Even the impersonalist wants to merge into the Brahman. You see, just like we went to Vrindavan in 1994, I did the Braj Mandal Parikram, and we were walking around for 30 days around Vrindavan. 400, 300, 400 kilometers barefoot, we walked around for 1 month. And then one time we went through like an ashram, and they were impersonalists, but they were worshipping the deity. Mayavadis, but they were worshipping the deities. They had deity, nice temple, deities were there, doing puja very nicely every day, but they were impersonal. They thought the ultimate goal is to merge into the deity. So they thought this is a way to control the mind. We chant kirtan, we do mantras, we worship the deity, but this controls the mind so that we can reach our transcendental destination of realizing aham brahmasmi. Okay. So this is, without a tinge of bhakti, because they're offering incense to the form of the Lord, they're chanting the names of the Lord, so without a tinge of bhakti they cannot become successful in their endeavor. So Prabhupada is explaining in this purport, you need bhakti in order to become successful, otherwise it's not possible in any path. Okay. Any points?
The harinam that we do on the street, so is it
Agyata
Sukriti for the hearers or
is
Nama
Bhas? Agyata Sukriti. Same thing.
This is referring to Buddhism from his lecture when he came. And he mentioned pastime of Haridas Thakur leaving this world. And Mahaprabhu asked him a question, the people who don't have faith, how they will be delivered. Then he gave three staged answers. I don't remember the third one, but the first one was Namavas and then Agyat Sukrati. I think Prashadam was there as well, but I don't know.
Yeah, but if you want to understand the science of chanting, then you have to study Harinam Chintamani. So if you study that, then you'll understand. It's in the first three chapters, it explains all these points nicely. So you should study it. Maybe in Kartik you can study that. Or do you want, we have 3 days. At the end, I can do Harinam Chintamani. I think I did it one other year, didn't I? Did I do Harinam Chintamani? We did Madhurya Kalambini one time. Harinam Chintamani. Should we do it again? It's good? What do you think is it? Okay. Maybe we'll do that. I'm open to suggestions. You have 2 weeks to come up with another idea. If no one comes up with a different idea, then we'll do Harinam Chintamani. It's interesting, actually. Yeah, I think we did a couple of years ago. In the Kali Yuga, we forget. We forgot even if we did it. So. What to speak of what we talked about. Most of the time we wake up in the morning and we don't even know where we are. Takes a few nights to work out what you're in. You know, when sometimes you're travelling overseas, you wake up and you can't work out where you are. Indrajumna Swami says when he wakes up in the morning, it takes him a few minutes to work out which country he's in. He's always moving around. He wakes up and he thinks, which country am I in? Actually, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the original source of all self-realization. Consequently, the goal of all auspicious activities, karma, jnana, yoga, and bhakti, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Usha, can you please read that?
The living entity is the material energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the material world is the external energy. Under the circumstances, one must understand that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually the original source of both matter and spirit. This is explained in the 7th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Bhumi rapo nalo vayu, kama mano buddhi evacha, ahankara ityam me dhinna kapitir ashtada. Apareyam itas tu anyam, prakritim vidhi mai param, jiva bhutam mahabhavo, yuvidham dharyate jagat. Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego. All together these eight comprise my separated material energies. But besides this inferior nature, O mighty Aunt Arjuna, there is a superior energy of mind which consists of all living entities who are struggling with material nature and are sustaining the universe. The entire cosmic manifestation is but a combination of matter and spirit. The spiritual part is the living entity, and these living entities are described as prakriti or energy. The living entity is never described as Purusha, the Supreme Person. Therefore, to identify the living entity with the Supreme Lord is simply ignorance. The living entity is the marginal potency of the Supreme Lord. Although there is actually no difference between the energy and the energetic, the duty of the living entity is to understand his real identity. When he does, Krishna gives him all the facilities to come to the platform of devotional service. That is perfection of life. This is indicated in the Vedic Upanishad. Evam evasya vrnate tena gabhyas tasyaisa atma vinshrute sanam aham. Lord Krishna confirms this Bhagavad Gita. Tesham sattva yuktanam bhajanam priti purvatam nadami buddhi yogam tam tena maham upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give the understanding by which they come to me. The conclusion is that one must come to the platform of Bhakti Yoga, even though one may begin with Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga or Ashtanga Yoga. Unless one comes to the platform of Bhakti Yoga, self-realization or realization of absolute truth cannot be achieved.
Any points here?
Inferior, and we should, we say Sheshatva, that means we are just our soul surrendered unto the Supreme Lord. If we understand that our position, then it makes it easier for us to understand His position, and that we can do devotional service in that mood.
Yeah, because Mahaprabhu says that there are three subject matters in the Vedas. What are the three subject matters?
Jiva, Prakriti, and Ishvara.
That's five.
But that's karma and
yeah. That's in Bhagavad Gita. But Prabhupada, Mahaprabhu says. Yeah, Sambandha, Jnana, Abhideya, Jnana, and Prayojana. Yeah. So Sambandha means relationship between Krishna. So Mahaprabhu says Krishna Sambandha. Krishna Sambandha means the relationship between Krishna's energies, which means the jivas, the internal energy, the external energy, Krishna himself, Vishnu Tattva, Shiva Tattva, Jiva Tattva, like this, all the different elements of Krishna's creation, how it all relates to Krishna. Right, this is Sambandha Gyan, knowledge of the relationship between Krishna and Krishna's energies. So then, in order to realize that knowledge, then you have to practice Abhideya. Abhideya means the process of how to realize this knowledge. This is, Mahaprabhu says, Abhideya Bhakti. It is by Bhakti that we understand Krishna, or Sambandha Gyan. So the process is devotional service. And the process is associating with devotees, visiting the holy dham, chanting the holy names, reading the hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, and worshipping the deity. This is the process. And by following this process, then one will realize Krishna. And this is bhakti, this is abhideya. Abhideya means the process of connection between Krishna, between the soul and Krishna. It is through bhakti that we connect with Krishna, that we can realize Krishna, that we can perceive him. And then finally you have prayojana. Mahaprabhu says prema prayojana. The ultimate goal of life is prema. Prema pumarta mahan. The great goal of life for all human beings is to develop love for Krishna. This is the perfection of existence. So this will come by practicing bhakti. By practicing the process of devotional service, the one will come to the platform of learning to love Krishna, or purifying one's heart. Srimbatam swakata Krishna, srimbatam Krishna. Prabhupada explains this is the process. By following the process of bhakti, one's heart becomes purified of all unwanted things. That all the unwanted things in the heart become purified, so then one can realize Krishna or remember Krishna. Any points?
Well, you see that everywhere in the world, it's Mayavadi philosophy is there. Not only in one religion, all the religions, you see, there is impersonal existence of the Lord. Now, if you understand that in the root cause of that, there's still some people are there, a mode of goodness, they're still impersonalists. What could be the reason? Is that Lord's energy which is stopping them to understand he is a supreme person, or is that their own foolishness, or maybe not a proper guidance? Why they can't just understand he is a supreme?
Ultimately, it comes down to envy. The living entity is envious of Krishna. So, as long as we're envious, then we can not understand Krishna. We remain covered by the material energy. Because if you don't want to accept that he is supreme, because if you're envious, then you want to be supreme. And the Mayavada philosophy teaches us that we are supreme. We are one with the supreme, with the Brahman, which is the ultimate truth, like that. So then they say that because they're envious of Krishna, then it is more attractive to become one with supreme than to serve the supreme. So that's why they're more attracted to it. Any other points?
Understanding love is very difficult. Understanding supreme love is even more difficult.
I was listening to a lecture by Gaurang Brahma, and he said there was good understanding about the sambandha. There was also very good understanding about the prayojan. Prabhupada's main contribution came that he set up the framework for Abhijaya, where we can perform the process. So this was one of the reasons, one of the points that we have this temple and this whole framework. And that's how people are finding it easy to perform devotional service.
Any other points? as pouring water on the root of a tree energizes the trunk, branches, twigs, and everything else, and as supplying food to the stomach enlivens the senses and limbs of the body, simply worshipping the Supreme Personality of Godhead through devotional service automatically satisfies the demigods who are parts of that Supreme Personality. So Prabhupada emphasizes in the purport that karma and jnana, as we said previously, are dependent upon bhakti. But bhakti is not dependent upon karma and jnana. Although Prabhupada explains in the purport, some people in India, they say that bhakti needs some karma, needs some jnana. Yeah. All sorts of philosophies people say. They say you need some karma, some jnana, some bhakti. They don't even understand what it is they are saying. Bhakti is independent. Right? Prabhupada quotes Rupa Goswami's verse in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Nectar of Devotion. Anyabhi lachita shunyam jnana karma adhinamita. It is free from jnana and karma and yoga and other processes. Bhakti is not dependent. Bhakti is only bhaktya, sanjayate bhaktya. Bhakti comes from bhakti. It's not dependent upon something else. Where do you get bhakti from? You get bhakti from the Majjhima Adhikari. You get bhakti from the preacher. Because one devotee is preaching and he is teaching bhakti and exemplifying bhakti, then you also become inspired in devotion, in bhakti. So bhakti comes from bhakti. It does not come from any other cause. It has no other cause. It has no other origin. Bhakti is only coming from devotion itself. It's not coming from karma. It's not coming from jnana. Just like some people, they explain, you do so much pious activity, so many good things, good karma, you give charity and do so many things, and then eventually that will lead you to bhakti. But that is not true. That does not lead you to bhakti. Just being a good person does not lead you to bhakti. Right? It is not by just doing pious activity that you become devoted. Okay? It may create a more
conducive environment.
Yeah, it may be a more conducive environment for someone to take to bhakti, but it does not give bhakti itself. Just like when we used to do book distribution on the street, then quite often people would stop would be nurses. Right? Because nurses are naturally selfless people. Compassionate, yeah, and selfless by nature. That is their job. So someone's walking down the street, you say you're from Melbourne or from another place, and quite often they'll stop and you say, what do you do? They say, I'm a nurse. Naturally they will stop because you're asking something, they'll say, do you need something? The heart is soft. So then it becomes easier for them in that condition to take Prabhupada's book. But it's taking Prabhupada's book, which is the act of bhakti. It is a jnata sukriti, is unknown devotional service. Right? So that helped them to create a better platform to take to bhakti, but in and of itself it was not bhakti. So it is only devotion which will lead to devotion. And Haridas Thakur says in Harinam Chintamani, it is only by heaps and heaps of agyata sukriti, or unknown devotional activities in the previous lifetime, that you take to devotional service in this lifetime. You did so much, just like you may have been born in, I give this example, you may have been born in India in your previous lifetime. So then you dug a well in one village, right? Because that is pious activity. Or you planted trees in one village, because that is pious activity. And then, now, you've come into another body. But those trees and that well that you dug 100 years ago in your previous lifetime in that other body, people are still drinking water from that now. And some of the people who are drinking the water from it are devotees. So every time a devotee drinks water from that, or they take that water to the temple to give to the deity, you make advancement in devotional service. That is agyata sukriti. Or someone in the village, some traveller comes and sits down under the cool shade of that tree. It says in the Vedas that to plant trees is very pious. Because people will come, they'll walk down the road. You see some of the roads in Vrindavan, like the road going out to Radhakund and so forth, and many tall trees. People have planted trees on the side of the road previously. Why? So when people are walking during the hot day, they will be cool. So it's pious activity. So you did that activity previously, And because you did that, and devotees are walking now, then you get the benefit of a jñāta sukriti. You make advancement in devotional service. So this is how it works.
You still keep royalty. You still keep receiving the royalty.
Yeah. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah, pretty good.
That's good. It's a good system. Yeah, that's
better. But then again, if somebody abuses it, right? Do you get the repercussion of that?
Means?
Supposing, let's say, that water is being used to brew alcohol. So do you get the repercussion of that then?
No, they get that. Because you didn't have anything to do with like that. It's not that you, like, if you were there, like if you're standing next to the well and you were pouring the water up and giving it to them, okay, then maybe. Just like it says, six people take a sixth of the karma when the animal is slaughtered. The person who slaughters the animal, the person who transports it, the person who sells it, the person who buys it, the person who cooks it, the person who eats it, all six get an equal portion like that. So then you have to do something directly. Any other point?
Well, as you mentioned yesterday, it's the intention that's very important. If you are planting the tree or doing a well, that you know you're going to get some sukriti out of it, that's not the right mood of that spiritual wisdom.
Yeah, you should do it because you want to serve the devotees. So in other words, then you dig the well, but then you dig the well because you think the devotees will come and drink the water. You know? They must be hot, they must be travelling, or you plant the trees on the road so that you know the devotees are walking to Radhakund. Then you think, then they'll be cool. So then that's devotional, that's bhakti. You do it as a service. Not because you're thinking, oh, I will get so much benefit. That's not really bhakti.
There's a lot of mood there. I've seen that in India that it's a pious activity, you get a lot of benefit if you do this. That's why you plan to use the distribute food and all those activities. That's something to lead you to that. You won't get the really, really good benefits if you're not doing it with the true right intentions.
Yeah, it means that if you distribute for some. That's it, put the hand like this. So it means that if you distribute prasadam, then even though you may be distributing prasadam, but you think, I'm doing it to get blessings, I'm doing it to get benefit like that. So that's a low level of devotion. But when you're more advanced, then you won't be thinking about yourself. You just do it because you want to serve the Vaishnavas. Then automatically you get all the blessings anyway. The neophyte devotee thinks, if I do it, I'll get the blessings. The advanced devotee thinks, if I do it, the devotees will be happy, and you get the same blessings either way. So then what's the difference? You may as well just purify your mentality.
Reading the definition of Ajñāta Sukriti, the pious activity is done without actor's knowledge. So it was not done keeping anyone in mind.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes people know we're doing it. Like if someone beggar walks past, or a beggar is there and you give some money, they see you, they know you did it. Still punya, still pious activity. But you could say it's even better when someone doesn't know that you did it. Like that. So both are still pious. Okay. During the rainy season, water is generated from the sun, and in due course of time, during the summer season, the very same water is again absorbed by the sun. Similarly, all living entities, moving and inert, are generated from the earth, and again, after some time, they all return to the earth as dust. Similarly, everything emanates from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in due course of time, everything enters into Him again. Just as the sunshine is non-different from the sun, the cosmic manifestation is also non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality is therefore all-pervasive within this material creation. When the senses are active, they appear to be part and parcel of the body, but when the body is asleep, their activities are unmanifest. Similarly, the whole cosmic creation appears different and yet non-different from the Supreme Person. So this is the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It is called Achintya Veda Veda Tattva. That means simultaneous, inconceivable oneness and difference between God and everything. Everything is God. We are within God right now. But simultaneously, He is different from everything, and He is outside of us right now. So Prabhupada gives the example, just like what's the example Prabhupada gives? Yeah, Prabhupada says, just like the king or the queen may live in Buckingham Palace, right, in one room, but we still say it is their palace. Even though we may be inside the palace, we don't say it's our palace, right? It is their palace. They may only be in one room, but still it is all theirs. So similarly, Prabhupada explains, Krishna may be in Goloka Vrindavan, but everything else in the creation is His. And actually He's in everything, and everything simultaneously in Him. But still, He's in His own place. We don't have to think that Krishna is everywhere, but He's also different. So Beda, Beda. One and different. Beda, Abeda. That is the philosophy of the Bhagavatam. Inconceivably. How is it possible? That no one will ever know. Yeah. Tamal Krishnamurti said, you get to a point where you just bow your head and you say, you are what you are. Whatever you are, that is. Krishna is so powerful, you can't work Him out. So you just get to a point where you just say, you are. That's enough. That's okay. My dear kings, sometimes in the sky there are clouds, sometimes there is darkness, and sometimes there is illumination. The appearance of all these takes place consecutively. Similarly, in the Supreme Absolute, the mode of passion, darkness, and goodness appears as consecutive energies. Sometimes they appear and sometimes they disappear. So, Prabhupada emphasizes in the purport that Krishna is never affected by Maya. Even though He comes in the material world, but He is always separate from the material world. When Krishna enters the material world, He does so through the Daivi Prakriti. In other words, He brings His holy Dharma with Him, and He performs His pastime on the spiritual platform. He never directly contacts the material energy. Even though it seems like He comes into the material world, but He never directly contacts matter. So Krishna is never affected by this material energy. His only contact with the material energy is through His glance. He glances at the material energy. And through His glance, through Shambhu, Lord Shiva is Krishna's agent for contacting the material energy. Directly He does not contact. Just like when you smell a flower, you don't touch the flower, but you can smell the flower. So Krishna, He does not directly contact the material world, but His energy interacts with the material world. It is only by Krishna that the material world becomes activated. Because the Supreme Lord is the cause of all causes, He is the super soul and all individual living individual living entities. And He exists as both the remote and immediate cause. Since He is aloof from the material emanations, He is free from their interactions and is Lord of material nature. You should therefore engage in His devotional service, thinking yourself qualitatively one with Him. By showing mercy to all living entities, being satisfied somehow or other, and controlling the senses from sense enjoyment, one can very quickly satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So what is the best way to show mercy to the living entities? It is to preach Krishna consciousness. Just like on Saturday, the devotees went to the grand final, MCG. But what did the devotees do? Distributed prasadam, distributed the holy name, maybe distributed books, but we don't go there to watch the football. So devotees are merciful to the living entities. And they dedicate their existence to uplifting others in Krishna consciousness, helping others come to Krishna. This is the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to bring every living entity back to Krishna.
By the way, just one point, that was on television, the 10-second breath, there was a Hare Krishna chanting was on the prelude to the grand final itself, so millions of people saw that the Krishnas were there as well. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and someone said it was on the radio also. So. Big media coverage. Being completely cleansed of all material desires, the devotees are free from all mental contamination. Thus they can always think of the Lord constantly and address Him very feelingly. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, knowing Himself to be controlled by His devotees, does not leave them for a second, just as the sky overhead never becomes invisible. So Prabhupada says that the goal of Krishna consciousness is to always remember Krishna. There's Rupa Goswami's teaching, always remember Krishna, never forget Krishna. So everything we do in Krishna consciousness is leading us to this point where we will only think of Krishna. Hey, two monkeys, what's going on? Hey. Right. I'm watching both of you. Don't think I don't notice what goes on in here. I know what goes on. Right. You and you. Okay? Right. So, the whole goal of the Krishna consciousness movement is to fill the mind with thoughts of Krishna. That is the point. The point of all of our activities is to come to the point where we always think of Krishna. That is the only point of all of our activities. If our activities are not leading us to thinking of Krishna, then what is the point of our activity? So therefore, when we become more purified and more advanced, then we think of Krishna in terms of our sahibhav. Sahibhav means your eternal relationship with Krishna, your swarupa. So that is what we are doing. That is the goal. Sadhana leads to sojja. Sojja means bhava. Bhava means thinking of Krishna in terms of your original relationship with Krishna. So that is the point of our sadhana, to lead us to this. So we must feel that we are going towards that. That is our goal. We must be trying to attain perfect Krishna consciousness by following the regulative principles. So we'll stop there. Next week we'll finish the chapter, and then next Tuesday we'll do another review of the section. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.